Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Oh, hello, everyone. Happy Monday. It is Halloween Monday week or something. Well, whatever. This is the Macko and Cos podcast. That is my carefully scripted intro. I'm Matthew Cos, and this is Bob Macko. Say, Bob.
Halloween is in 8 days, Matt. 8 days.
Not in this house.
That's true, actually. As we walk around right now, it's like a Halloween museum in here.
Yeah.
Or the home of someone really, really into killing.
Yes, exactly. Well, I watched The Exorcist and one of the Insidious movies over the weekend. So, you know, getting plenty of my Halloween and horror movies in this week.
What's the worst horror movie that you have to watch?
Oh, God, that's a tough one to spring.
I always watch Halloween 2. Which isn't very good,
yeah.
But because it's the continuation of the first night, I watch it.
Yeah, that's the one in the hospital where eventually
right.
Michael Myers, by the way, spoiler alert, 3, 2, 1, gets shot in the eyes and stuff. So yeah.
And further, spoiler alert, doesn't work.
Does not. No, it's odd. It's weird how bullets in the eyes seem to work for most humans, but Mike Myers, Jason Voorhees, people like that, doesn't work.
Dr. Loomis somewhere is saying, I drew this up. On paper, it worked beautifully. I shot him in the eye several times. Show me the flaw in my plan.
Ooh, you know what we got to do? Not this week, because this week our top five is top five cereal. Is top five...
Serial killers?
No, because I said with Dr. Loomis, but that was good. I like the joke you made there. That was... yeah.
Wordplay.
That was wordplay. Is like top five characters from horror movies who aren't the killers.
I like that. So top five secondary characters.
Yeah.
Whew, that's a really good one. Even thinking about it now, the mind go like Scatman Crothers in The Shining.
Yes, exactly.
And it can't be like the second character either, because that's a cheap way out, I think. It should be just the local seasoning.
Okay, yeah, we're going to do this next week, because I already have one of my top five, and this character is awesome.
Man, a lot of things happened on this podcast, and not all of them was good. That was a Scatman Crothers, by the way.
God, this...
The best... Why are we even doing the pod now? Like, why don't we just skip ahead and do this?
I wish it
As
was
you
Thursday.
Pointed out, Matt, it's only 8 days till Halloween.
I know, I wish
we
this
barely
was...
got any time and two more pods left.
I think my favorite part in The Shining was him on the bed and the slow pan, and there's like half naked, these beautiful Nubian models, like just that 70s sort of art on the walls of Scatman Crothers' bedroom.
Right.
As he's sitting there when he's watching TV and he's getting, you know, back in Florida. They just, I don't know why they decided to have it, but plenty of
his
nudity.
His bedroom looks like a mechanic's garage.
Yes.
Right? Because there's the Playboy Playmates up on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So in the episode today, the big question is, are sports ruined by good coaches? Top five cereal. We are going to do our sports takeaway. Mine involves the Toronto Marlies.
And actually, a test, because I went to the CFL game this weekend.
All on Saturday.
29-28, the Argos over the Blue Bombers, ensuring that they would have home field advantage for the Eastern Final. And we are going to determine how much of that game we can actually remember.
Yeah.
Because I have a pretty spotty record remembering Argos things I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm convinced there's something neurologically wrong with my brain where just, for whatever reason, it doesn't absorb CFL information.
Well, that's
so we'll see.
We'll
this
see.
This is testing. You know what this is, Matt?
Yes.
Science.
This is science.
This is science.
This is actual science on the Macko and Cos podcast.
You should put on a lab coat.
I should.
You could put on one of these ghost sheets that's hanging from the ceiling all around your home.
Yeah, here's this thing, Bob. In 2017, when middle-aged white guys, they have to be careful about the wearing of white sheets. Okay,
I would argue in any year they have to be careful, but yes, it's topical.
Even more so now, you know. And by the way, to all you racists down in Charlottesville and wherever you are, you ruined the tiki torch. The tiki torch was a great thing. It said it's night, it's time to party, we were going to have some barbecue, we're going to have some drinks, there's probably little, you know, umbrellas in the drinks, and now it's like, yeah, you can't go to, if you go to a store and say, yeah, I need 20 tiki torches, the person behind the counter is like, what are you, a bigot? You can't buy them anymore.
I'm not responding.
Got nothing to that?
I got nothing.
All right.
All right,
so we got takeaways. Takeaways, we got the Leafs, World Series as well.
Yeah.
And are we going to do any listener questions today? Probably not, right?
No, no, because we're going to do big questions. So listeners, people that sent them in, we'll save it till Thursday, and we'll accumulate more questions between now and Thursday, just because we came up with, you know, a good big question.
Okay, so let's start off with the World Series takeaway I want to do, and then we can go over your experiences at the Marlies game.
And then we'll do our scientific Argonaut study with Bob Ackroyd.
So here is my takeaway, that anybody who goes on to talk about how the Astros have momentum between now and the first pitch, 8:08 on Tuesday night, is damned to hell forever, or at the very least, an eternal dinner with Pat Tabler.
Okay.
Where the check never comes, and he never stops telling anecdotes.
All right.
Are you shocked that I took a shot at Pat Tabler?
No. Actually, I was going to do a follow-up joke, but no, I'm going to leave your joke. It was a good one. Explain why there is no momentum for the Houston Astros.
Because momentum goes as far as starting pitching. You have as much momentum as you have change of pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all agreed. Didn't we once retire the word momentum on our old radio program?
Yes, we did.
Completely non-scientific. But also, it diminishes the fact that this actually is an incredibly interesting World Series. Not just because of history. I mean, last year with the Cubs, that was interesting because, you know, we had 100 plus years on the line.
Yeah.
These are the two best teams.
Yes.
And it's amazing how in baseball, maybe because all the analytical revolution started there, but we don't even have the argument about whether analytics matter anymore in baseball. I know that in every other sport, there's the eyeball test that everybody hangs so dearly onto. But in baseball, what I love about this is with the Astros, you've got the ultimate process team. And almost nobody does this in baseball. I remember talking to Dan Shulman about this on the air, and I said, do you think there'll be copycat teams when it comes to the Astros? Teams that are willing to lose 100 games a couple years in a row and just stockpiling draft picks every opportunity they get. And he said, nah, you got to understand, there's 81 home games. It's just too much ballpark to fill. You can't try to have a lousy team.
It is a lot. Like, it's one thing to do it. You know, in hockey, that's 41, which is a lot, but it's double in baseball. It's a big ask.
But Carlos Correa, George Springer, you've seen how they...
Oh, it's worked!
And even the draft picks that allow you to get a Justin Verlander, and now he's 8-0. By the way, Verlander gets me nervous, and I'll get into that in just a second. So on one hand, you've got the process, which is an incredibly analytics-driven... and in fact, I can't remember the name. Jeff Luhnow, that's the guy's name. He came from PetSmart. He wasn't even a baseball guy. He was a guy who just came in, and when he was with the Cincinnati Reds, figured out we need data. We need resources. We need to think about what we're doing and not just send Art Howe with a cup of coffee in his hand out to some crappy ballpark and tell us who's going to be the next Jeter.
Poor Art Howe. He got killed in the Brad Moneyball, Pitt Moneyball movie. Yeah,
Art Howe, unfortunately, has become the living symbol of the eyeball test.
Yeah.
He was actually a pretty good manager, too. Well, there's that. What are you going to do? So you've got, and then on the other side, you've got the Dodgers, who might be the definitive analytics team. And you know what I love about the Dodgers, Matty?
Alex Anthopoulos is getting it done.
And he's going to finally, an Alex Anthopoulos team that brought in Yu Darvish is finally going to win the World Series. I had hoped that would have been the Jays.
Yes.
It did not work out that way.
It did not work out that way. I think most people were predicting the Dodgers. Most people were predicting the Dodgers in six. But
really? I think the Astros got this one. I mean, predictions are cheap, but...
It comes down to this. I think if Verlander is this version of Madison Bumgarner, then it's going to be the Astros.
8-1 since he came over, including the postseason, with a 1.39 ERA and 59 strikeouts in 51 2/3 innings.
He's Madison Bumgarner.
In the past 10 postseason starts, a 1.77 ERA. So it's not even just this year. Yes, he's the Mad Bum of this year.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, still the best nickname. Or the worst. Can't decide which.
But he's the guy that, like, remember, that Giants team wasn't a great team in the regular season. I think they won, like, mid-80s. And just every time Madison was on the mound, he gave them 7 or 8 innings. And if they need him for relief, like, he destroyed everything in front of him. And he covered up all the other weaknesses of that Giants team.
And came in relief in that Game 7, as you recall. He was Johnny on the spot. He did everything. And so... Even if he gets you 2 victories or 2 really quality starts, you only got to win 4.
Yep.
And oh, yeah. They've got an incredible offense. I actually don't see how anybody could take the Dodgers over the Astros, although I'm hopeful it happens.
Oh, no. Most predictions I'm seeing is Dodgers in six. I think, you know, the first game is going to be critical because if Houston wins the first game and they got Verlander starting game two, they're going to be feeling pretty damn good.
Tonight's the Kershaw start. Or yeah, I should tomorrow. Say Tuesday, tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And the Kershaw 25, I'm looking pretty good. If you're new to the podcast, Matt and I made a bet because Kershaw, according to Matt, is a bum. Not even a mad bum, just a bum.
Never
a LeBron James, you bum.
Okay.
Kind of guy. And so we bet the over-under was 24.5 on innings pitched and strikeouts thrown.
Yes.
Right now, he is at 17 and a third innings and 16 strikeouts. He's probably going to get two starts.
He's got to get shelled. He's got to get.
You need him to go out in the second inning.
Oh, yeah. I need.
Could happen. Houston.
Yeah, it could. I mean,
could happen.
Jose Altuve. I am taller than you. If you do not beat up on Clayton Kershaw, I'm going to come and steal your money. Though you might be slightly stronger than
me. If I lose the bet at this point, then you're right.
Yeah.
Then he was a bum in the World Series.
It's a fun narrative. It's a fun narrative to dip your toe in. I can't wait. Like, listen, Houston was so much fun. Like, down 3-2 to the Yankees, and then Verlander on Friday, and then them coming to win on Saturday, and great defense by them. Like, just... Houston's run has been a lot of fun. I'm kind of sad the Yankees are out because the Yankees make things more interesting. But at the same point, City, Houston, you know, after all the flooding.
I love the process. And I also think that if they win a World Series, then they have to give a ring to Bo Porter because he was the sacrificial lamb who had to go out there and manage the team when they weren't even trying to win.
I think they should give Sam Hinkie one.
They pulled
well.
A Buffalo Sabres where if your goalie got hot, he got traded.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Sam Hinkie. Why not? Sam Hinkie should get a ring too.
Should get one as well.
You know what I love about the Dodgers? Mm. Of the 9 players projected for Tuesday's starting lineup,
yep,
5 made less than $1 million this season.
Really?
Really. Corey Seager, Cody Bellinger, Enrique Hernandez, Chris Taylor, and catcher Austin Barnes. And they have the highest payroll in baseball. So go figure that. They've got 5 guys in the starting lineup. That's, to me, like, that's what happens when your front office says, go nuts.
Yeah.
Do what you got to do. GMs and owners never think that way. It's always about, now, you know, Adrian Gonzalez makes a ton of money, and I think he makes about $25 million a year.
Yeah, I'm just pulling up their roster.
And he's injured, so there's nothing you can do there. But the point is, most teams don't have the guts to say, let's just go with our best players.
Andre Ether, 17. Now I'm fascinated by this. $17.5 million for Andre Ether. Do you think, like, how many?
34 at bats all season.
How many Dodgers? Good, by the way, good for them for being able to keep it together. Because if I was in the locker room and I'm one of the guys getting paid, like, if I'm Cody Bellinger, I'm looking around, like, I'm just like, everyone is buying me dinner every night. And I'm getting 17 lobsters. Like, I am looking at you, Andre Ether, and you are going to be buy me a car. What are you doing today? Just go get me a car.
Good point. It is Ether, but technically we won't hold that against you. Yeah, you know what this is like, the Dodgers? Have you ever had a dinner party and you're not sure how much to cook for everyone? And you cook a whole bunch and you realize everyone's happy, but you still have entrees ready to go?
Yeah.
And you decide not to serve them.
Mm.
That takes guts.
Yeah, that does.
Because you actually spent the time to buy them and cook them. But if you serve too many entrees, don't you find people at the table get nervous? Because now they have to feel like they got to try everything.
Yeah.
And they feel guilty for that one dish that nobody really wants. And so maybe one person has a tiny scoop of the scalloped potatoes that didn't turn out.
Yeah.
And so it's like this never-ending symbol of the failure of this dish. It just sits there while everyone's... eating, even when they get to their wine and their dessert.
And it's always a potato dish.
It's like
if one is going to be sacrificed, it's going to be the potato dish.
It always is.
Always is. By the way, Clayton Kershaw, before we move on, $35 billion.
Deserved.
You know what?
Best pitcher in baseball.
Tell the kids out there, you know what? Learn to
be left-handed.
Be left-handed.
Be left-handed, kids.
Don't worry about tackling someone. Be left-handed.
All right, so that is my takeaway for the World Series. Anybody who talks about Astros momentum, you are cursed to dinner forever with Pat Tabler.
There you go. Ooh, and it's not even a good restaurant. You're like at a crappy restaurant as well.
Yeah, one of those mediocre Italian restaurants where they give you thin tomato sauce.
Yeah.
God, I hate thin tomato sauce.
That's like a place.
McDonald's ketchup with some water added to it.
Yeah, like you're at, I'm trying to think, like a Eastside Mario's. You're at Eastside Mario's.
Anywhere that has a really healthy bread bowl, there's a chance that it's not that good.
The bread bowl is there as an apology because the main is going to suck. So just fill up on the bread and the salad because the veal cacciatore, not so good.
And as they taught us in The Simpsons, Matt, you don't make friends with salad.
You really do not.
All right, so Cause.
Yeah.
At his first AHL game this weekend.
I did. Well, I've been to a couple in the past.
But have you?
Yeah.
I did not. Okay, well, I take it back.
So
one of his first AHL games ever this weekend.
Yeah, and here's the takeaway. This was part of my twin brother. All bunch of the kids from his kid's school went. His son Graydon, everyone from his grade, all these kids went. It was just one of those days where lots of different schools throughout Toronto, you know, they were able to get a discount on tickets. So
the place was filled with parents and kids.
Yes. And I got to tell you, Bob, like, I have one criticism I want to make of you. I'm going to do something you did this morning. But before I do that, I want to also just pay you a compliment.
Okay, thank you.
Because Charlotte is a damn good kid.
Thank you.
And she works great in adult parties. She works great on her own. And that is difficult. That is like just to raise a kid. And you and Sandra have done a great job.
It's come at the sacrifice of everything from romance to career.
Well, let's go to the sacrifice part.
Just okay.
And this will eventually get back to the Marlies. But this goes to just organization, and I think it hurts your ability to be organized. You sent me an email at 7:38 in the morning, said, can you do 9:30 a.m.?
Yep.
I wrote back immediately, yes. Then at 8:20, you wrote, 9:30, okay? I'm like, why are you sending me that second email? I already responded to the first one, and all I wrote was, yep.
Okay, so Matt, let's play a little game here.
Okay.
It's called, what did you do between 7:30 and 8:30 this morning? Go. You go first.
I got up at, I hit snooze a couple times, got up around 7:20, and I went down to the gym and went for an 8K run.
Oh, okay. That's very nice.
Yeah.
So at 7:30, I had just finished doing my notes for the pod. Then I got Charlotte up. Then I cooked her breakfast. Then I went through her piano lessons with her for 15 minutes. Then I sat down and did some of her practice doing the clock because she's learning how to read time properly. Then I sat down.
Ironic.
Yeah. That is actually really funny. Maybe we should have sent her. So then I made her lunch for school. Then I got dressed quickly. Then because I'm doing a cleanse, I quickly threw together my lunch and my dinner for the day because I'm going to be out busy all day.
Yep.
Then I mentioned I got dressed, right? Yep. Then brushed teeth, helped my wife with some work that she had to do, quickly threw a vest on and went out the door.
There you go. Yeah. So pretty much identical mornings.
Identical things.
Which leads me to my main point.
Mm-hmm.
Man, being a parent must be hard. Because I knew you were going to do that. I set you up.
Well, and actually, it was kind of a normal morning, Matt. Yeah. And I think anybody who's a parent out there listening right now, you know what they just heard?
Yeah.
Nothing in particular.
Nothing
just special.
Just a regular day. At that Marlies game, I realized basically the parent is just there to make sure their child doesn't run off and to constantly be feeding their child. It is hilarious just watching all these parents, you know, especially ones with multiple children. And sometimes the kid wants to play with the phone. It's like, there's a hockey game going on. I will say the cute side, whenever the Marlies scored, they won 4-0 against the Charlotte Checkers. Take that, Charlotte. The kids would just go nuts. And it was super cute to see. Now, beyond that, it seems the main role of a parent is keep them in eyesight and keep them fed the whole time.
So one of the keys to taking a kid to an event is don't do individual seats if you can at all avoid it. Try to have a long bench because on a long bench, you can move around a lot more freely. I love the Toronto Wolfpack.
Mm-hmm.
They are a rugby team. They play at Lamport Stadium down on King Street.
Yeah.
And I love it. First of all, if the stadium is really crowded, you're useless. You're hopeless. You've already lost because there's so many people around. No matter where your kids go, they're going to piss somebody off. They don't have enough room.
Yes, that's so true.
They're designed for adults to stay in one spot,
yeah,
which is something kids never do. So you've already lost.
They are climbing all over my brother, the younger one, Elliot. I'm constantly just trying to make sure his legs aren't kicking the back of the head of the person in front.
What do all sports arena seats do? They fold up and they fold down. Yeah. Strike two.
Yeah.
Because what does a kid who starts to get bored immediately start doing?
Whack, whack, whack.
Whack, whack, whack. Whack, whack. Start whack. Playing with the seat.
Yeah.
Whether it's they're going, they sit on top, so they perch their butt and they're precariously perched right at the top, and then you do the flop down so that they land in their seat, or they just start banging it or climbing on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it becomes a jungle gym.
There's a lot of climbing and the railings on the side. That's another jungle gym. Basically, that's a jungle gym. So all the
also the length of the game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If the game was one period long, kids would be fine, right?
Yeah.
But by that third period, I mean, honestly, Matt, unless the game is riveting, how often does your attention drift by the third period if you're at a game or the fourth quarter or whatever?
This one's a bad one because I'm a nerd. I just sit and constantly find things to keep an eye on. Like Lilligren got an assist yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like the funny thing
is, nailed his name.
Yeah, thank you. We'll move on then because, you know,
drop the mic.
I feel like I watched more of that hockey game than 99% of the parents there.
How are you feeling about our future?
You know what? There's a lot of young kids. I got to say this, though. The power play was horrible. Just horrible on Saturday. So many times it seemed like the checkers were on the power play half
checking?
The time. You know, beyond one beautiful goal. You know, one great just ding, 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 you know, tape to tape to tape. So I would say great game by the Marlies, got to work on their power play. And you know what? I'm the only one that can say that because every other parent had no idea what was going on.
They were not following one bit.
No.
Here's the thing. As a parent, when you take a kid to a thing, you are no longer going to that thing yourself. You are simply there to be security.
Yes.
That's all you do. If you go to a movie's a little bit different. Because
I don't think it's sucked in. You get sucked in more.
You get sucked in more, right?
Yeah.
And also, you only tend to take them to kids' movies, so they're designed to be interesting. But if you took your kid to go see, I don't know, what's an
Blade
adult
Runner.
Movie? Yeah, right. Blade. Well, even that one might.
No, trust me. I saw Blade Runner.
That's pretty long, eh?
It's pretty long. It's a hard follow. Denis Villeneuve makes you work for it. Okay.
Make you work for it. But yeah, okay, but I can't judge. But okay.
Yeah.
Although, are you a Blade Runner nut?
No,
because I'm a Blade Runner nut.
I enjoy Blade Runner. I'm not a Blade Runner nut. Have you seen Rogue One yet?
Like Tears and Rain. No, I haven't, Matt. But did I tell you what I did from 7:30 to 8:30 this morning?
Yeah, you went for a run. Oh, wait, yeah.
No, that was you. That's right. That's right.
But yes, you are.
We better get through this pod because you're missing out on me time.
Oh, yeah. I know. I want to get to your Argonauts. You went to see the Argonauts with Dave Naylor and Steve Simmons.
I did.
By the way, I was also offered one of those tickets, but I couldn't go because at the same time, I was at the Marlies game. It was on at the exact same time.
I wound up taking Bob Sr. The funny thing is now, I take Bob Sr. and treat him the same way that I do Charlotte when I take her to events. I'm just there to entertain Bob Sr.
Yep.
I go and I get him a hot dog and a drink, and I make sure he's happy. He forgot to bring a coat, so I gave him my coat, so I sat there and froze while he wore my coat. It's weird. You get to a certain point in life and you realize that you are there to also take care of your parents.
Mm-hmm.
That weird dynamic shift happens.
Yeah.
We had a great time, though. So here's what we want to know. And this is going to be a scientific experiment. The first of many, I'm sure, on this program, dedicated as we are to science. I never remember what happens in the CFL. And I try every year. But from week to week, I can't remember anything. Go ahead. Ask me a question about the CFL. Something moderate, because I watched probably about a dozen games this year.
Okay. Who has the best record in the CFL?
I'm going to guess Calgary.
Yes.
Okay. That was a guess. I didn't know that. I just knew they had a really good team.
Who's the worst team in the CFL?
Red Blacks?
No, the Montreal Alouettes.
All right.
Ottawa's in second place.
These standing questions are too hard because you have to follow the league.
You were asking for easy questions.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, here, do you want a couple easy questions from the game?
Yeah, so the point is, what we're going to try to figure out is, does my brain actually reject CFL information the way a body might reject an artificial organ, a baboon heart that's been placed into its empty cavity of a chest? All right, so let's go.
Let's start with an easy one. What was who won?
Oh, come on.
Who won?
29-28 for the Argos.
That was my second one. Okay, who was the kicker who missed a chance to win the game for Winnipeg? This guy's been the best kicker in the CFL the last 3 years. It's not even close.
Jan Stenerud.
I want to skew young. Justin Medlock.
Okay, no idea.
Justin
Left-footed
Medlock.
Kicker, though.
Is he?
I noticed that. Okay. I might be wrong.
I think you're wrong. Okay. Who was the leading running? Who was the number one running back for the Argonauts?
Oh, nuts.
He came back from injury. His dad used to play in
Waters
the NFL.
Yeah, Waters Jr., something Waters Jr.
James Wilder.
Damn it.
Do we move on? Because I feel like these are not the hard questions.
I was on the sideline. Okay. Wilder. Not Waters.
Yeah, James Wilder. Okay. I just said the name. Yeah, so that doesn't really.
He was really good, too.
Yeah, he was.
Breaking tackle. Strong runner.
Where were your seats, by the way? You said you're on the sidelines?
Yeah. Well, they were close. I mean, we were just about nine rows up, so we were pretty low.
Who was the leading receiver? Okay, two guys hit over 100 yards in this game. Can you name one of them?
I'm going to say Winston Dressler.
Weston Dressler.
Okay.
I'm going to give you half points. He was. He was the leading receiver.
Okay. Not Winston?
No, it's Weston Dressler. Okay. Also back from injury.
And I'm going to say whoever Posey's first name is. I think it's DeVere.
Oh, Bob Backowitz. Yes, DeVere Posey. Also at over 100 yards.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we should get it now, Bob. I'm going to give you a B.
Yeah, I think I did pretty good.
Yep.
Number 26 on the Argos laid a hell of a lick on Dressler. I can't remember his name right now, but man, he smoked him. It's a good old-fashioned football hit.
There you go.
It was thrilling.
And again, for people out there, it's such a great place to watch football. BMO Field. Like, especially, I know it might have gone a little bit cold, but it was a sunny day, and you got the water, you got the skyline. It's a great place to watch a football game.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. Now, of course, it was an amazing game that came down to the last play, so there was that. No, we had a lot of fun. Before we get to anything else, can I do a quick Leafs takeaway? Because even though it was a bit of a nothing of a game, I feel like we should address it.
It will be addressed in the big question, but go.
Do you have anything else? Why don't we do the top five here, and then I'll do a quick Leafs takeaway, and we'll use that to get into the big question, because the two are closely related.
Yeah.
All right, so our top five. So this goes back to last week, when just as part of our random, let's just call them flights of fancy.
Yes.
An excursion down digression lane.
By the way, I'm going to digress from the digression.
Go for it.
After you were done dealing with Charlotte this morning, you had to make your lunch and your dinner, or your breakfast and your lunch?
Well, because I'm doing the cleanse, right?
I know. So what is it? What's your meal today?
Do you want me to go get it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll show you.
Hang on. Okay.
Just stall while I talk.
All right. Bob is putting down his mic. He's going to be grabbing his cleanse. These cleanses, of course, are absolutely disgusting. By the way, thank you very much for everyone who's listening on iTunes or Audio Boom. We're going to try to get this up on SoundCloud. Remember to always rate us and leave a review. And if my only thing I want to say is either give us a really great review or a crappy review. Don't give us anything in the middle. Don't give us a meh. So Bob is back.
All right, so what do you want first? Do you want my afternoon snack or do you want my lunch?
Let's go with your afternoon snack.
Well, here's lunch.
Okay, lunch is a red water tin.
There's a drink in there.
What's in the drink?
It's some kind of powders and spinach.
Powders and spinach.
And here's my afternoon snack.
Your afternoon snack is a carrot that looked like you just grabbed. It's kind of very phallic, but it looked like you grabbed it right from the farm. Like, it is not peeled. It's just like... This looks like the meal I would feed a rabbit. Like, if I was at a petting zoo, this is what I would pay $2 to feed. So that's your snack.
There you go. And that's it.
That's it?
That's it.
That's a horrible... Man, you're going to be hungry for dinner.
I sure am.
You are going to be hungry for dinner.
Yep, and angry.
Oh, yeah.
But it's working.
Good, good. Yep, that's
weight's coming off. Energy's going up. Feeling good.
Good.
Clear-minded, so...
There you go.
Onwards and upwards.
Do this
Alrighty,
before the Christmas holiday meal season starts.
Well, I am doing it now, you noticed. Yeah. I am trying to get it out of the way before mid-November hits.
Yeah.
All right, so last week we just started talking about cereals, and we said, hey, why don't we do top five breakfast cereals for the top five this week? So here we are. So, Kaz, you're more of a cereal person than I am, so why don't you go, and then I'll just weigh in.
Okay, first off, I want to give my apologies to the also-rans. These three easily could have made the list, but they didn't. This is how good the list is. Frosted Mini Wheats, Count Chocula, and Corn Pops. None of them made the list.
All worthy candidates.
All worthy. So we'll start at number five. You got to have something healthy. Okay, these aren't just going to be five, you know, Bolo chocolate O's. You know, it's not just going to be that.
Bolo chocolate O's.
Yes.
That's a great name for a cereal.
Exactly. And it turns your milk into a caramel sludge. At number five, Special K. Great healthy cereal. You know, it works well when you add the raspberries or whatnot. You know, it takes to sugar, then it's no longer healthy cereal. But number five, Special K. Number four, semi-healthy. Feels like you're healthy, but really you're not. Honey Nut Cheerios. I could have done normal Cheerios. And also Cheerios, there was also apple cinnamon Cheerios. Cheerios, they really spread their wings in the cereal world. But I'm going to go with the classic one, Honey Nut Cheerios. At number three, they're great. Frosted Flakes. You got to have Tony the Tiger. It's got to be represented. Again, it was definitely a sugary cereal, but it wasn't as bad as, say, Count Chocula.
Yeah, because I'm going to stop here.
Okay.
Frosted Flakes were gross. Even as a kid, if you are 8 years old and you try a cereal and you go, that's too sweet, that's too sweet.
The funny thing is, I was just saying, they weren't.
They were. It was like giving a horse a cube of sugar.
Get the hell out of here.
It was like taking the icing sugar before you make a cake and just drinking one of those squeezy bags full of it.
Frosted Flakes were delicious.
So no, they weren't delicious, Matt.
They weren't delicious.
You know what? You know how it tastes good to have a little bit of salt
yep.
on a meal?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it gives it that nice salty little
yeah.
kick to it.
Yeah.
Why doesn't someone then lick a bag of salt?
That's what
because it's disgusting.
Yeah, but
that's what Frosted Flakes are.
No
is
way.
Basically just like taking a big thing of sugar and spooning it into your yap.
Bob, Tony the Tiger would not lie to me, nor would he lie to you. It's part of a balanced breakfast. Also, the milk didn't
part of a balanced breakfast. Which part? The part that unbalances it?
No, the part that makes you have to eat vegetables afterwards. Also, the bowl of milk did not turn into a chocolate
they call
milkshake.
It part of a balanced breakfast.
Yeah, there's a lot of leeway there.
And
there's
the balance,
you can go.
We're not discussing actually a healthy balance. What we're talking about is it doesn't contribute to it. It's the unhealthy part.
I didn't do Lucky Charms. Like there's so many more, you know.
No, but honestly,
sugary cereals.
Frosted Flakes traumatized me as
Get
a kid because I had friends
here.
At the cottage who would Boris Maidan used to have his Frosted Flakes every morning. You know, it's like when you're a kid, you're on an island, so you wouldn't know. But for those of us who weren't on an island, you would go to visit your friends.
Oh, the non-islanders.
Places.
I heard
yeah,
about them.
Exactly. Mainlanders.
Ah,
Mainlanders.
Good people. Salt of the earth.
Anyway, I would go have breakfast at his cottage once.
Yeah.
And believe me, it was all the old Ukrainians that came over together, got some land up by Farley Circle, by Jackson's Point.
Yep.
They were not cottages as you would know them.
Hey, that's
I'll just stipulate that. Okay. But beyond that.
How's your place up in Huntsville, by the way?
It's beautiful.
Okay, moving on. Yeah.
My rental unit?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it was traumatized by it because it was so sweet. You can actually feel your face puckering.
Wait a minute. You were traumatized by cereal. That is a good childhood. So tell me, what was your most traumatic moment? Well, when I had to have this delicious sugary cereal. You don't get traumatized by Frosted Flakes. You get filled with joy. The only time I got traumatized was when that bowl was empty. On to number two.
Because you were addicted to sugar by then and you were sitting there jonesing.
Yeah, I was a child, like every other child.
Sitting there rubbing your lips like Dave Chappelle, the crack addict.
Bob, I was at that Marley's game. All I saw at that Marley's game was a lot of kids that looked like they just had a box of Frosted Flakes. Coming in at number two, Golden Grahams. Got to have something a little bit different than just the sugary or the chocolatey. You know, and for me, Golden Grahams are that great one where you could maybe sort of go, it's not that unhealthy, even though, of course, it was. Golden Grahams at number two.
I've noticed a theme with you.
Mm.
All your cereals are like, it's pretty healthy. Not really. It wasn't good for you. But, you know, we got to pretend it was healthy and we enjoyed it anyway.
Bob,
like, that is the theme of your life, Cause. The theme of your life is encapsulated in these cereals. I know it's not really good for you, but I'm loving it, so whatever.
And then at number one, that's the voice of someone who spent an hour and a half, you know, getting his kid ready for school.
Mm-hmm.
At number one, this one does not follow the theme. There was no pretending.
Okay.
Aye. Get me aboard that ship, because if there's one person I'm going to follow, it's the captain. Captain Crunch at number one. Oh, so bad for you. So delicious. Unapologetic. I don't even think they said part of a balanced breakfast. In fact, I think it was the official cereal for Deadbeat Dads. Captain Crunch coming in at number one.
You know what? You're right. All of your meals basically sound like a divorced dad trying to get his kid to shut up when he's got him for a weekend every month.
It's the Kramer versus Kramer.
The Kramer versus Kramer.
I mean, if we're gonna go pull some old references here, I'm gonna go Kramer versus Kramer.
You know what, Cos? I love the way these are such a great litmus test, such a litmus test for who we actually are as people.
Yep.
All of your picks. I know that this isn't good for me, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I like that it pretends to be good for me because I don't want to deal with the guilt.
Yeah.
That exactly. is you.
Guilt. Moving on.
I did put aside a couple of things because kids, you know, back in the day, we all had lousy breakfasts, right? Yeah. Mine was Trix. That was the one. Remember the rabbit, the Trix rabbit, and they had the.
Do I remember it? Of course, I remember Trix are for kids. I hated that rabbit.
Yeah, I loved.
Oh no, sorry, I hated those kids. I wanted those kids to be beaten up. Silly rabbit, Trix for kids. Hey, you bleeping kids! How about you give a small bowl to the rabbit?
Tough but fair. Actually, you could have my carrot if you wanted.
No.
Or should I say my lunch? Also, I liked Frankenberry because it turned your milk into like a. Into a pink slurry.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. And then you would drink the milk.
Yeah, it was great.
At the bottom of the bowl. Yeah, probably not good for you. Number five, alphabets. Just because you remember when you were a kid, didn't you like spelling words with the alphabets and then eating them?
Yep.
Zoodles, alphabet soup, anything that has letters for kids, winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Before the internet, this was ways to distract children. It's not like today where you give your kid the, you know, oh, here, fine, play with my iPad and try not to take all my data. Now, like, that's 2017. In 1987.
We had alphabets.
Yeah, or in 1980, I can spell words with my alphabets.
Puffins is kind of sweet, but it's good. I don't know if you have Puffins.
I have Puffins.
Yeah, not bad. A huge fan. And then my top three, you're not going to appreciate. But cornflakes is awesome. Because you can do whatever you want with
it. It was very versatile, except it very soon just became, if you did not eat it in the first couple minutes, it became goo.
Soggy. Yeah, exactly. Well, kind of like Captain Crunch did not remain crunchy for long.
Oh, but it
became Captain Squish.
Yeah, but it
quickly.
Lasted way longer because there were so much more chemicals in the Captain
That's
Crunch.
An excellent point. There was like a sealant.
Yeah.
You know what it was? Remember, you know when you get your dry cleaning done, they say, we martinized? I think they martinized Captain Crunch. So it had that pristine crispness to
it. Yeah, it kept its structural integrity. It lost its nutritional integrity, but the structural integrity.
You could
was
cut
there.
A finger on those pleats.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Cornflakes is like the utility infielder of breakfasts. Mm-hmm. Rice Krispies is my number two. Snap, crackle, and pop, great. I mean, not only did it taste good, I'm sure it wasn't healthy, but at least it wasn't coated in sugar, but it had a gimmick. It had a sound.
Yep.
Matt, it was musical. Mm-hmm. For those of us who loved music, and I'm not shaming you here, I'm just saying, you could put your, didn't you ever put your ear?
Of course I put my ear to it, Bob.
To the bowl of Rice Krispies?
Yes.
The Pop Rocks of cereals. Rice Krispies, genius.
And I remember thinking, you know, in the commercial, you were a lot louder than you are in my actual bowl.
Snap, crackle, and pop. Great characters, too. Kind of like the Keebler elves, but for cereal.
Yeah.
I'm going to make that my number one now, the more I think about it. My number two, I'm just going to backtrack here, was Raisin Bran. Because what I liked about Raisin Bran was you had the bran, but you also had the raisins. So you had the healthy and the sweet together.
What was the sweet?
Raisins.
What? Get the bleep out of here. Raisins.
And there was a little bit of sugar added to it,
ugh.
Too.
Disgusting. No, raisin bran.
But you don't like raisins.
No, raisins are disgusting.
Yeah, and they're fantastic.
They're nature's greatest mistake.
I don't think that's true.
Agree to disagree.
Maybe the platypus?
No, platypus is delicious. Unlike the raisin.
Platypus eggs. All right, Trump Jr.
Good top five.
All right, not so bad. So I'm going to do my quick Leafs takeaway, which will get us to our big question, which is, are good coaches destroying sports?
Yes.
6-3, the Leafs lose to the Senators on Saturday night. Pretty much a nothing game. I go back to my earlier theory from their one loss before in the season, that the worst losses are the ones that happen exactly the way you would expect.
Yeah.
We all know that they're scoring at 14%. We all know that cannot stay. And this is how the team looked when they weren't catching the breaks and they were playing against a really patient defensive system.
Yep.
Which they will see more of in the playoffs.
Yes, they will.
I was a little bit nervous to see Freddie Anderson. Again, not great. And he's got a sub-900 per save percentage. So no matter how well they've done, I don't think you can be a reasonable, responsible Leafs fan and not at least park in the back of your head, would like to see Anderson be a bit better.
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
Goalies, the average is about 92%. And Anderson is far from that right now. Yes, that's absolutely in the back of your mind.
I was thinking about the offense and the wave, because we've called it the blue wave.
Yes.
Now, what is the lifespan of a wave? It begins, it crests, it smashes onto shore, and then it just disappears.
Then it disappears until you wait for the next wave.
Until you wait for the next wave. And that's the thing about waves, is they're not permanent.
Nope.
They just come one after the other, but it's not a continuous thing. So maybe that's just what we have to live with.
Yeah.
What this team is, they're going to come in bunches, both the wins and the goals.
And the thing about Frederik Andersen is the shooting percentage for the Maple Leafs right now, you're saying it's around 14%.
Yeah.
The best single season mark ever was the Capitals in 2010. They were at 10.4%. The Pittsburgh Penguins have averaged 8.45% at 5-on-5 in the last 10 years. So, you know, and those are two different numbers. One's 5-on-5, one's just overall. But, yeah, you're not going to survive at 14%. That's going to go down. So when that 14% shooting goes down to 9 or whatever it will end up being, you need Frederik Andersen to go from where he is to 92%.
Babcock loved this loss, guaranteed, because it's allowed. It gives him permission to go back to his young team and say, that's what happens.
Don't when, do it, Donnie. When, don't right, do it.
When you play an unstructured game. The classic phrase is pond hockey. Even Randy Carlyle, remember the year when he got blown out?
Yep.
The team started fast this year, and he said, if we keep playing this way, we're going to get killed.
And he was right.
And he was right.
And he was right. And yeah, and it's funny, all that you're saying, that actually kind of goes to the big question. Because I hate the fact that Babcock was upset with run and gun style. But you know what I was more upset with, Bob? All the praise for Guy Boucher. Guy Boucher, two middle fingers at you there, buddy. Even Austin Matthews, while praising him, said, yeah, he plays, you know, they got this really, you know, boring style and you got to be patient. So what are we praising the coach for? For boring and patience. That's not what I want in my sports. I hate the fact we are praising a team and they're very good at it, that finds a way to clog up a high-flying attack. I hate that we're praising a team that's great at clogging up the neutral zone, and they're very good at it. And Boucher is very smart. This is not taking away anything away from his intelligence, his hockey IQ, or the ability of the players to execute it. They all did their jobs brilliantly. And it's not even angry Leaf fan. It is more the bigger picture. I say we need to judge and shame the Bouchers of the world. Because all it is, oh, we don't got a lot of talent. All right, everyone in the neutral zone, let's wait for them to make a mistake. A plague on them.
The 1-3-1 is not exactly fun hockey. It kind of got him run out of Tampa because the players just didn't want to play it. You had all these high-powered, offensive, skilled players who didn't want to spend the whole game just sitting around waiting for a mistake and trying to avoid giving up the long ball.
Yeah, and think about contracts. And you're not going to make as much money because you don't score as many goals or assists. Even though counting statistics, you know, have their pluses and minuses, they would have fewer goals and assists because of the system.
Don't overcommit in the offensive zone and puck retrieval to make sure that you're never out of position. And try. The thing is, there have been some really good analytical pieces that have been written on why Ottawa's system tends to be effective for them and that the block shot is kind of at the center of it. But they're really good at, and Boucher talks a lot about this, is take away the middle of the ice. You know, whether it's in the neutral zone, the offense, or the defensive zone, do not let the other team gain territorial control over the middle of the ice. Because truthfully, that's where most stuff happens. When you're trying to score goals, most of them happen right in front of the net.
Yes.
And so what they do, and they've been told to do, is they block a lot of shots. They just don't, like, they'll give up plenty of shots. They're not a great possession team, but everything from the outside. Everything is from the outside, and the outside is death for the hockey fan to watch. Everything pushed to the outside is basically like saying there will be no action here.
And good on them. They got to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They had a hell of a season. But I guess my point is, what I'd rather is, I don't, and I get why they do it. I need to say that over and over. I get why they do it.
Well, their job's to win.
Yeah, their job is to win.
And it's also to maximize their roster.
Their lack of talent. To maximize their lack of talent.
Which is why, Maddie, the Erik Karlsson is the number one, we got to get that guy out of town candidate. I think in all, I guess Oliver Ekman-Larsson's pretty high up there too because Arizona's pretty bad. But just knowing that, you know what drives me nuts? Hearing that narrative over and over again. Karlsson's never been better because he's finally committing to a defensive system. That makes me want to barf.
Yes.
And makes me want to barf.
Which gets...
You have one of the most unique talents in all of the game. What you're saying is, I think we finally turned him into a hockey player by ensuring he doesn't play up to his maximum potential at what he does best.
He's like Leonardo da Vinci, but in Ottawa, it's like, here, we're going to make you our blindfold tester. And what bothers me the most... is I'm tired of coaches going, yeah, we're going to clog up the neutral zone. How about this? I want all coaches to go, we're going to take that neutral zone and we're going to turn it into this crazy attack, and we are going to
Pittsburgh, though. Pittsburgh, when they came in with Mike Johnston, basically freed up the forwards to do, and freed up the defense. I mean, his whole thing was, let's try to get the forwards the puck in a timely fashion. And they were moving forward, and they won a cup doing it. And for a lot of us, I think we saw that and thought, great, because this is interesting, good hockey. And that was his way to get around the flaws that the defense had by just making sure it was all about the forwards. And I think you see the Leafs doing exactly the same thing. Is like, how do we make sure the forwards are carrying the course of play?
And I just want more of that. And I get it, because not teams have the same level of talent. But it gets to the big question. Do good coaches make sports bad? And I think not all the cases, but in certain cases it does. Like when Guy Boucher...
Take a stand, Matt. It's the big question. You can't say sometimes yes, sometimes
yes.
No.
Then overall, yes.
It is a coach's job to wreck the game.
Yes, absolutely.
Leagues want scoring and coaches want defense.
You know what coaches want more than defense? Control.
Right.
And what's easier to...
That's a better way to put it.
It's easier to control defense. It's easier to control them not scoring than us scoring.
There's an old saying that says, when you've got the puck, you're on your own. But when they've got the puck, you're mine.
Yeah.
That's coaches to players.
Yeah. And it starts, you know, like we're talking a lot of the NHL, and we'll get to the other sports, but it's about fear. It's about, no, we can't attack. Let's wait for them to make the mistake. And you know, let's go to baseball for a second. Now, because of analytics and coaches getting smarter, they know, don't keep a starter after they've gone through the rotation twice. So what does that mean? It means more pitching changes, makes the game go on longer. It leads to more strikeouts, fewer balls in play, less offense.
The Tony La Russa factor. He would drive you crazy.
Yeah.
Just you'd sit there and you'd wait just to watch one at bat because he needed that lefty-on-lefty matchup. And it would happen over and over again.
Mm-hmm. In football, it's all about, okay, no interceptions. Three-yard pass. No. Don't throw the ball downfield.
Check down.
Bubble screen. Check down. You know, okay, maybe we'll throw the ball deep a couple times. You know, in last night's Sunday Nighter, you know the most amazing moment of the game that what I could see, because eventually that fog machine took over? Atlanta, and unfortunately the drive ended with them getting a field goal blocked. They went for it on 4th and 7. And Al Michaels was confused. He's like, what are they doing? He's like, well, I'm sure they're just going to try to draw the Patriots offside. And then Matt Ryan snapped the ball. And they're like, what's going on here? It was great. It was exciting.
Okay, so let's stick to sport to sport, because I do think that coaches and what they aspire to changes from sport to sport.
Since
we're ripping on hockey, let's stick with this. You have heard me say that the NHL hates its fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that. And I think that coaches hate their fans, too, because all they're trying to give them is wins, but they don't care in which way that it's delivered. Sometimes you'll find a team president. Like, remember Brian Burke said, we're going to win, and we're going to win with entertaining hockey.
Yeah.
And they didn't win. That wasn't so fun.
He's not here no more.
But really, I think the key point you made was the one about control. That coaches get fired when their teams look undisciplined. And nothing makes you look worse than someone being caught out of position. Right? Those glaring mistakes are the ones that kill you. So what do they teach? They always teach never be caught out of position. But unfortunately, in that concentration, what they don't teach is how do you maximize opportunity? I feel like this is the business world as well. I feel like this is where modern life has gotten us, is don't take chances. Just game the system and make these incremental small moves forward. And it's boring.
Yes.
And it's dull. And hockey in general is not exactly a... The Roger Nielsens are few and far between. The person who envisions the game in a different way.
Or just offensive innovator.
Well, but who really is that? You know, you see this in football, and we can make that comparison in a moment. But really, when we talk about who are the great coaches, like is Mike Babcock an offensive innovator? I think he knows how to get his team how to play well. They're structured, they're organized, they do smart things. But it's not like you would talk about Mike Babcock in the same way you'd discuss Bill Belichick. Or in the same way you discuss a Sean Payton or
Don Coryell.
Let's
go old school.
Don Shula. Any of these sort of great minds for the game. I don't know that hockey rewards creative thinking. I think it rewards detailed and structured thinking.
Detail, structure, discipline. I think, yeah. I mean,
don't be caught out of position.
Yeah.
And it's not about make the most out of things. It's about limit the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just from an aesthetic point of view, it's not that great. From a practical point of view, I get it. But there was something about it that just made my brain explode when all this praise going for Guy Boucher, who did a great job, and the prime goal is see the talent over there, make sure the talent over there don't do nothing.
It is all about stopping the other team and throwing enough pucks at the net that maybe you get a lucky bounce.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, Ottawa is the perfect example of what we're discussing, because you've got a coach who's all about structure, and you've got Erik Karlsson, who might be the single most creative player in the game, certainly in that absolute top elite category of position redefining and expanding players. And I kind of feel like he got blamed a lot for the losing that happened there because he didn't, quote unquote, look like a traditional defenseman.
Yeah.
Even though they were a mess everywhere else. Mm-hmm. But he got blamed because he was the best player and he wasn't doing what you were supposed to do and lead by example. And all that stuff makes me barf about hockey.
Yeah, I agree. And that can translate into the other sports. And one sort of general overarching message, you know how we always hear about the coach who was there from dawn till dusk and, oh, he had to sleep at his office last night? I think all sports would be better if every coach, you got a 40-hour work week. That's it. That's all you're going to have. Because you know what happens then? There are mistakes. Oh, we overlooked that. And then with mistakes comes chaos, comes fun, comes crazy, comes unexpected.
Amen. Absolutely. The death of hockey as a fun game is the triumph of coaching, but more importantly, systems play.
Mm-hmm.
No mistakes.
Yep.
Everything predictable.
Yep.
Why do you think the World Juniors, the under 20s, are so exciting? Like a team can be up 4-1 in the third and you think it's not over. It's not done.
Yeah.
And the biggest reason is because the kids can blow it.
Yeah.
Because they're not old enough. They're not structured enough. They still make mistakes. And you get the same thing in the NCAA. Wild upsets. Wild swings.
Wild swings in both college football and college basketball. Yes. Same thing with the World Hockey Championships that we had, that goofy event here in Toronto. And yes, I think I would love to see a hockey game or like 20 games. There's no coaches. All the coaches have to go away. They're all suspended. They all go to the island of misfit toys, and they can spend their days devising more systems for shot suppression and just let the players be like, okay, guys, we're in charge now, and it would just be, whee! I'd like to see that.
You know, in some ways, it's not fair, like for hockey, because you can get really creative or try to figure out new ways to game the system 5-on-4, I think, like your special teams. But I feel like in a way that's a bit of a cheat. Like, if it doesn't happen 5-on-5, it feels like, it's not that it doesn't count. It just counts less for me in terms of the creativity. Like learning how to, like in football, it's 11-on-11.
Yep.
It's always 11.
Always 11-on-11.
And there's the field is always the same size and it's always 11-on-11. So it's not taking advantage of a temporary situation. It's about learning how to re-scheme and rethink so the other team doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Also, like they put so much more emphasis on the offensive coordinator and the idea of the creation of a philosophical attack.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's so many more opportunities to surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And by the way, this whole coaching thing, this is not just about the NHL. As I mentioned before, in baseball, all the pitcher specialization, I think, is going to hurt offense because you're going to get less balls in play. In football, so much more dinking and dunking. Now, in football, as you just said, you do have offensive coordinators, so there is more chances where different offenses can feel they have a different identity. A lot of that just has to do with, do you have a healthy quarterback? And the NFL, they have their version of where coaches make things more boring, where it's like, nope, no taking chances. We're not going for it on 4th and 1. It's going to be 1st and 10, 2nd and 7, 3rd and 3. Hopefully we get 3 yards and then we're going to try to do it again. So it exists in all the sports.
Sure it does. And I watch the Buffalo Bills and believe me, they're all about, let's just try to hold the clock, run the clock, give the ball to McCoy. But, you know, they wound up beating Tampa Bay and they sit at 4-2.
They waited for a mistake and that Tampa wideout fumbled the ball and they went down and got that field goal. Oh, they're sucking you in.
So this is not a statement that I think most people will agree with, but to me, like, the best and the worst of what we're discussing was Sochi Olympics 2014 semifinal game, Canada versus the U.S., and it was 1-0.
Yeah.
And we look at that as, it's funny because that game was incredible to watch, mostly because of the stakes, because you're in an elimination situation, but it might be the most perfect game I've ever seen a team play. In terms of Canada,
yep.
I mean, you had that incredible roster, but they made no mistakes.
None.
And the other team didn't score.
It was the only time where a goal lead felt like a 4-goal lead.
It might be the antithesis of the 6-5 game that wrapped up the 87 Summit Series. And both of them are great moments in Canadian hockey.
Yep.
But I would take the 6-5 game against the Russians against the Soviets any day over that 1-0 win over, because it was 1-0. It was always exciting. I mean, anything could happen at any given moment. But it was an example of how that game, like the Canadians played a perfect game, and so hockey played at its absolute maximum that way isn't nearly as interesting as hockey that's played wrong.
I would say this, 2014, my main memory was the women's gold medal game, Canada, right. United States. That game was bonkers crazy, back and forth.
That's a good comparison.
Oh my God, was that a great game.
Baseball, to your point, is being killed by the way pitchers are getting used.
Yep.
And
because managers are getting smarter. They realize, oh, two times through the order, can't get a third time through. We see what the numbers say. Get out.
And what you don't get, like, Verlander then becomes the exception. Like, we're talking about Verlander feels like the Madison Bumgarner, but there's so few opportunities. Unless a pitcher is absolutely pitching out of his mind.
Yeah, like Josh Beckett did back in his run.
You think of Jack Morris when the Twins won the World Series, yep. And he wound up going into the 10th. Mm-hmm. But those are going to be fewer and farther between. And so the idea of the guy on the mound who has that historical legacy performance, if you can get them to 7 and you can keep the other team under 2, just get your quality start, get the hell out of there.
And it's now getting to 6. Now it's just 6 innings, and eventually that might even shrink. Bob, we got about 2 minutes left.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't get to talk about basketball and basketball coaching. We'll have to do that another day.
Yeah, we'll do the basketball. I'll just say this real quick, this one little point. First game of the season against the worst roster I've ever seen, the Chicago Bulls. As the joke I made, the best player the Bulls had was one of the Lopez brothers, but the worst of the two Lopez brothers. It was Robin, not even Brock.
Wow, they look bad, but they looked very good against Philly.
With no Joel Embiid. 5 minutes into the first quarter, the Bulls-Raptors game, DeMar DeRozan wide open for a 3. Hesitated, and then wouldn't take it. And anyway, he did. He drove. He got fouled. And, you know, they're trying to make him more of a 3-point shooter, and it's the tiniest of sample sizes, but it's an interesting little moment when this is when you should take a 3. He's like, I'm going to do what DeMar DeRozan does. I'm the scorpion and the frog, baby. I'm going to sting that frog.
Yeah, it's going to be a spoiler.
Spoiler alert if you don't know the fable.
Yeah. I just want to end on this. I think I was right when I said that Matt Devlin's going to drive us crazy with the CJ Miles thing.
Oh.
And I can't live with CJ kilometers. That's got to stop. And that's got to stop now. Not wordplay.
Thursday's going to be a gooder, Bob.
Ooh, yeah.
Bunch of Leafs games, bunch of Raptor games, plus first two games of the World Series, and our top 5 horror movie characters. Secondary characters from horror movies.
Love it. All right, let's get going.
All right, Bob. See you on Thursday.
Take it easy, bud.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.